Presents a book study of The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. My name is Rodney Giddens, and welcome, welcome one and all, to our 33rd edition of a book study of The Power of Now. One Love Center is an awesome opportunity to know the divinity within you, to know the enlightenment that is available to you, through you, from within you, for you, about you, that is you, that you are indeed a light that shines brightly from within to without. And what One Love Center does and who we are and what we do is about creating a sacred environment where spiritual growth and development flourish through living in a practice of spiritual principles. It is our mission to provide a stable and welcoming community for all who choose to practice and grow, to play and unfold their understanding of spiritual principles and spiritual living. And simply what that means is we honor all paths to God. We honor the spiritual presence and essence that is each one, that is in each one, that lives as each one. And so we get to come together and play in this awareness, to play in this truth of a divine knowingness that has wonderful people like Eckhart Tolle write great books like The Power of Now, groundbreaking in a way, because it it brings once again a guide to spiritual enlightenment to the masses. And I think that's so important, and that's why we are presenting it to you in this form, in this manner. So I welcome each and every one, knowing that it is the divine in them that calls them to be present, whether it's live or through the archives, knowing that there is an answer, there is a solution, there is a reason, there is a calling for you to be listening to this show today. And it is your participation that makes a difference in your life and the life of others. So I really do know from deep within that there is a healing happening through the revealing of truth, whatever that truth may be for whatever individual. But each one of us are individualized expressions of the one divine truth, the one divine mind, spirit, whatever you want to call it, infinite truth, that we are all of it. We are one of it, with it, as it. And so I give thanks for each and every one on the call. I give thanks for all those who will share this information with someone else. I am so grateful for the ability to use this technology to not only bring the power of now by Eckhart Tolle more to the forefront, but to also advance the awareness of Centers for Spiritual Living and One Love Center, which meets in Brooklyn, New York. Yes, we are in Brooklyn, New York, 886 Pacific Street on the first and third Sunday of every month. And in December, we'll be meeting three Sundays because the last Sunday is the Burning Bowl ceremony. So look forward to that. And please feel free to show up. We meet. We start at 11:30 a.m., first and third Sunday, and then on the fourth Sunday in December, the Burning Bowl ceremony as well. Once again, all are welcome. So, I am, once again, a licensed spiritual practitioner with Centers for Spiritual Living, also on the ministerial path or track, doing ministerial studies with the wonderful Sun Coast Regional regional aspect of Centers for Spiritual Living arm of Holmes Institute. Previously known as Holmes Institute, we are the wonderful teaching opportunity. And it's so awesome that we can have on the East Coast the most perfect, loving, spiritual, conscious study organization. And so I'm just really grateful for each and every one who knows anything about us and contributes in some kind of way, shape, form, or fashion to the great things that are happening that makes such a big difference. Such a big difference in the lives of each and every one. And whether you heard about us for the first time, our School of Spiritual Leadership on the East Coast, it's called the Sun Coast Florida Campus. And it allows for people on the East Coast who are already spiritually licensed practitioners, or maybe they are from another faith and they are wanting to become licensed ministers in Centers for Spiritual Living. So there's a lot of great stuff happening. It's an explosion of spiritual truth that is happening for each individual. So with that said, and I'll get back into where we do meet, which is the Village at Garage at 886 Pacific Street. And also in that space, it's a great space. There's a boutique in the front and a wonderful art cafe and also a performance space. There's a wonderful opportunity it's a gallery as well. So it's just a wonderful place for communities to come together. And it's at the Village at Garage, and you can find them on Facebook. And it's a Renate Albertson gallery as well. So please look it up. Make use of it. Great rates, great space, great people. It's a lot of love. So we at One Love Center, and we are a teaching chapter. We're not a church. We're a teaching chapter. We're a spiritual organization. We're a spiritual community. And it's all about allowing and helping each one achieve the spiritual life that they desire. So into The Power of Now. In The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, we are in Chapter 10, moving right along. And this is the last chapter. And we take our time. We're not in a rush. So if you're listening in the archives, or if you're listening on the internet, I'm using a hardcover. We are in the 10th chapter. It's the meaning of surrender. We've covered a lot. We've covered all about the ego. We've covered about the mind, small m, mind, and how the ego operates in that realm of the mind, and how it's so easy for us to disassociate ourselves from our true nature of being pure spirit, because we are spirit living a human existence. It's obviously and easily too easy to think of ourselves as only human. I'm only human. And we say that when things don't go our way. A lot of times when things do go our way, we want to take credit for it as humans. Look how great I am. I mean, there are lots of people who will give praise and honor and respect to God, or by whatever name, you know, they like or choose or study. However, many times, either way, we get caught up in humanness. We get caught up in the mind. We allow the ego to have its way, to have control, to have its sway. And therefore, totally usurping our power, just totally reducing the very powerful beings that we are, not in truth, but only in belief. We are powerful beings. And it's up to us to remind each other of that fact. And that's what we're doing here with The Power of Now, with One Love Center. Reminding ourselves of our true nature. As Eckhart Tolle says, it's The Power of Now, a guide to spiritual enlightenment. I think one of the most important things to remember is that, yes, we are spiritual beings. We're not just human beings trying to be spiritual. It's like we're spiritual beings trying not to be human, trying to, you know, get away from our humanness, and that's not the answer either. The real answer is to embrace all of it, to embrace all of life. And when we do that, we are living in the now. When we recognize, okay, I happen to be a spiritual being, my essence is not a form, however, I am residing in form, I'm residing in a body. I always liken it to being a passenger or a driver in a vehicle. And that's what we're doing with our spiritual essence, okay? We're operating this body as though it's a vehicle and transversing our way through life, through the highways and byways and roads and avenues and streets and hills and valleys of life. And it's so very easy to think that we are humans doing this. It's confusing the car for the person driving the car, for the spiritual being driving the car. You don't see a car and say, oh, he. No, you say the driver of that car is a great driver or reckless or whatever. But not that car is reckless. No. The car just obeys what the driver is doing most of the time, unless the driver's lost control. And usually if the driver has lost control, that's the ego who's doing the driving. Yes, I'm sure some of you may agree to that. That's what that is. That's not the spiritual mind with a capital M. It's a spiritual essence that is not in control. It's the human brain that thinks it's running the show. And so we get to chapter 10, and it talks about surrender. What are we surrendering? What is the meaning of surrender? We are surrendering our belief most of the time. We are surrendering our limited understandings of usually how we operate on a planet in the level of form, in the level of manifestation. And if there's anything to surrender to, it's usually the fact that we haven't got control. I surrender to the fact that, you know what, my life is unmanageable, and this comes from the 12 steps. The first step is we admit that our lives had become unmanageable, powerless over the disease, diseased thinking, and that our lives had become unmanageable. And when that admission is made, that's the first step for spiritual enlightenment. My friends, I got to tell you, we are all on the path of spiritual enlightenment. The question is, which way are you moving? Are you moving toward the light, enlightenment? Are you seemingly standing still, or are you moving back the other way? Many times when we think we're standing still, we're not. Many times, we are moving backwards. So it really is important to take stock of where you are and who you're being in each moment. Eckhart Tolle says in chapter 10, and we're going to pick up on page 1. Let's pick up on page. We'll do a slow recap. A very brief, recap. And we'll pick up with surrender in personal relationships. And there's a question that is asked. What about people who want to use me, manipulate, or control me? Am I to surrender to them? And it says, they are cut off from being, so they unconsciously attempt to get energy and power from you. It is true that only an unconscious person will try to use or manipulate others, and this is page 177. He says, it is true, but it is equally true that only an unconscious person can be used and manipulated. It says, if you resist or fight unconscious behavior in others, you become unconscious yourself. But surrender doesn't mean that you allow yourself to be used by unconscious people. Surrender doesn't mean that you allow yourself to be used by unconscious people. Not at all. It is perfectly possible to say no firmly and clearly to a person, or to walk away from a situation and be in a state of complete inner non-resistance at the same time. And I'm sure many of you have done that. And this is me speaking, not reading from the book. Many of us do that and I would dare say somewhat unconsciously. I'd like to believe that many of us have some kind of built-in knowing that says, you know, let me get out of here. Let me just walk away without having to figure out that that's the right thing to do, that that's a safe thing to do, that that is the best thing to do. A lot of time we just, there's this inner knowing that says, okay, well, there must be someplace else for me to be. Excuse me, I'm just going over here. Or, and even if we don't say that, we just like, I'm going over here. Like I like to say, at least in my own mind, I won't say it out loud to people. I'm like, oh, I got to grow now. You know, yeah, I got to go, but I got to grow now. I, the longer I stay here, the longer I will feel my power slipping away. The more I feel my powerful God's will being bent to an ego that will say, what will they think about me if I leave? What will they think about me? Oh, it's all about me. And just totally had me feeling weak to a situation that's only in my head. And if I am unconscious, then I will allow myself to be used, maybe just as a sounding board. You know how people want you to listen to their stuff and you don't get a chance to say anything? And I don't mean from a spiritual practitioner point of view. I mean from the point of view as they just want to complain, they want to gossip, they just want to talk. And you just happen to be there, and you're just there, and you're listening, and you're being used. You're being used in a way that is not necessarily beneficial to you, and certainly not to them, and not to them either. Because, and what good is that use? Well, it helps them stay small. They're being run by ego, and ego doesn't necessarily want them to improve their lot, because that would take the ego out of control. And it certainly doesn't help you improve who you are. So I say, hey, I got to grow now. Got to grow. Got to go to grow. And the moment that we make that decision, we are growing. We are making a positive action. And that is part of surrender. It is a positive action that we take. Surrender doesn't necessarily mean lying down and being a doormat. Oh, well, I guess that's just the way it is. Nothing I can do about it. No, that's not surrender. Surrender, the best kinds of surrender, one of the best, is positive action. So when we take that kind of positive action, and then Eckhart Tolle does not only mentions that, but in personal relationships, which is a section that we're in, walking away is a positive action. Maybe if it's an argument with someone. Last week when we had Muwatta Rasuli, and we brought up the part of The Wizard of Oz where there's a sky writing that says, surrender Dorothy. And Muwatta said, you know, there's times when if he feels he needs to say something three times, it's time for him to be quiet. It's time for him to shut up. You know, and many times some of us will argue, trying to get our point across, who can talk louder, who can talk more frequently and rapidly and consistently and incessantly. Listen to me. Thinking that that's going to get our point across, that they're going to actually listen. In those moments, we could actually benefit from being quiet, from surrendering. Surrendering maybe a false belief within ourselves. I know that I've experienced one that says, oh, they're not listening to me. They don't listen to me. Nobody listens to me. I don't have anything worth saying. And then go on a whole litany of lies, self-depreciating conversation. And I surrender. I surrender that thinking. In 12-step, in the meeting rooms of many, I'd probably say the majority, whether it's AA or NA or CA or any other A, could be Debtors Anonymous or Gamblers Anonymous or any anonymous, is an important slogan. It's one word, think. Yet that think sign is upside down. Why? Because people surrender their thinking to a power greater than themselves. They surrender their thinking to a program of spiritual principles that work. And so the think sign is upside down as a reminder that the thinking that actually got them to that room was upside down thinking. And it's not over yet. That at any time, the habit of that upside down diseased thinking could flare up like it was today, not even yesterday. And therefore, create problems in each one's lives. I'm going to invite a caller that we have here on the line. So as long as the background is clear, we're going to invite the caller to say hello. Hello, caller.
Hello. How are you?
Hey, I'm wonderful, thank you. And this would be Ellen.
Yes.
Hi.
Ellen Suasso joining this wonderful call.
Well, good, and we're glad to have you. I don't know, do you have the book, The Power of Now?
Yes, I do, somewhere in the house.
I've heard a lot of people say that. Where we're in is a chapter on surrender, the 10th chapter, the meaning of surrender. And the particular section is surrender in personal relationships. And that's where we're talking about now. And the part that I had just read, it says, when you say no to a person or a situation, let it come not from reaction, but from insight, from a clear realization of what is right or not right for you at that moment. Let it be a non-reactive no, a high-quality no, a no that is free of all negativity and so creates no further suffering. And so what Eckhart Tolle is saying is that sometimes, he says earlier in the, further up, that surrender doesn't mean that you allow yourself to be used by unconscious people. Not at all. It is perfectly possible to say no firmly and clearly to a person or to walk away from a situation and be in a state of complete inner non-resistance at the same time. And so I was just mentioning that many times we do need to do that. We need to say no and not feel like we're allowing ourselves to be a doormat. What we're doing is we're actually coming from a place of strength, of knowing, hey, you know what, that's not good for me. I mean, if you're in a room of people drinking poison, doesn't mean you have to do it. You can say no and walk away, you know. You know, we know what's right, and times when we don't follow that, we get lost in the ego. The ego starts thinking about, well, what are they going to think about me if I don't do what they're doing? What will people say? You know, so the ego gets very self-centered. I mean, it is. It's a place of self-centeredness. And when we're not in touch with the truth of who we are, we get caught up in the small mind, the small M, the mind that is the ego, that everything is about it, not about the truth of who we are as spiritual beings, because we have an ego as part of our human experience. That doesn't mean we have to let it run the show. And usually the ego wants to fight, it wants to control, it wants to look good at all costs, you know, and even in personal relationships, and probably especially in personal relationships because we invest a lot in personal relationships, right? We want to look good. We want to smell good, you know. That becomes important when we get caught up in our humanness, forgetting that we are spiritual beings. Is there anything you'd like to add to that, Ellen?
Well, I like what you say about that surrender. It's not about letting people run over you and standing in your truth for what feels right to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's very important, because otherwise then we run into feeling guilty for the actions that we have made, or regrets. Better than guilty is regret, or allowing other people to run our life. And we must, and in order to do that, we must know who we are and what we stand for. I think that that's very important. And what you just shared with us is highly, highly important, to know that you're free to stand on what is true for you at the moment and take action on what feels right, not on what others think is right for you, because they're not living your life. You're living your life. Oh, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, and what's so important there in what you say is because one of the things that we really, I think it would be good for us to know and or remember, is that each one is living a life from their own perspective. I can't live your life for you. You can't live your own life for me. And when we do try to do that, we can't really do that, but we try, and we try to get other people to let us do that, or we try to take control of them, then two things are happening. One, I'm not living my life, and nor is the other person living their life. So it might be three, because then there's two people not living their lives. And it's more than that, because if I'm not living my life, then all the things I really need to be doing are not getting done, and that's affecting all the people who should be benefiting from what I really need to be about. So it's more than just one or two or three, actually. So when we're not living and being who we are meant to be and do, that affects a whole lot of other people. And so, yeah, so if I'm letting people walk all over me, then who am I serving? You know, I'm not even truly serving people who are walking all over me. They got no business walking over me. They need to be doing something else themselves, not trying to walk all over me. That's pointless. It doesn't benefit anybody, really. And if it does, it's only temporary. So that happens a lot in personal relationships. Eckhart Tolle, on page 178, at the top, begins with another question. He says, I am in a situation at work that is unpleasant. I have tried to surrender to it, but I find it impossible. A lot of resistance keeps coming up. And Eckhart Tolle remarks, if you cannot surrender, take action immediately. Speak up. Or do something to bring about a change in the situation, or remove yourself from it. Take responsibility for your life. Do not pollute your beautiful, radiant inner being, nor the earth, with negativity. Do not give unhappiness in any form whatsoever a dwelling place inside you. And that's another important thing for us to remember. We have to take responsibility for our own life. If somebody is seemingly walking all over us, then it's up to us to say no, to walk away, to say stop that, or leave me alone, go away, or we remove ourselves. But he says, do not pollute your beautiful, radiant inner being, nor the earth, with negativity. It's like there is no place for that anywhere. Now, I remember sometimes, I think when I was a kid, they would say, you have to stand up to the bully, stand up for yourself, you know, and I get a black eye, you know, like, I tried to stand up, you know, got beat down. And we weren't taught how to do non-resistance, you know, in a safe way, you know, in a way that wouldn't seem to make the situation worse. And I know I did not feel support from teachers or from, you know, guardians or parents. They're like, well, go hit them back, or, you know, and that, like, that didn't solve anything because I just got beat up again, you know. So I didn't learn a positive way to surrender. Well into adulthood maybe, but, you know, well, I take that back. One of the ways I used to surrender was I was very fast. I could run. I could run from situations very quickly. And that was, you know, a saving grace. And that was a way that I could surrender. So, you know, that's something else that, you know, we learn coping skills and coping mechanisms. And we do the best we can. And so I think that's part of what he's saying. Take action immediately. And he says, if you cannot take action, for example, if you are in prison, then you have two choices left, resistance or surrender, bondage or inner freedom from external conditions, suffering or inner peace. Now, you know, I think especially as a child, you know, I had no concept of what inner peace is, you know. It probably would have sounded very good, but how to get there, I would not have had a clue. I would have had a clue. I would have run. And in the action of running, I felt inner peace. That was something that I really liked. And then when I had a bicycle, I could just ride and have inner peace. I wouldn't call it inner peace. I just knew that I was doing my best, as Eckhart Tolle says, to bring about a change in a situation by removing myself. Now, I want to add something here to what Eckhart Tolle says. He says, if you are in prison, well, a lot of people are in prison in their own mind or in their own body. You know, there just does not seem to be a way out of the situation because we have imprisoned ourselves by our thinking. And our thinking doesn't really leave us any other options. And so I always say, well, how do we get to that place where we can actually begin to entertain another option? Well, people who are suffering in addictions, they usually have to get to a place where, I think Popeye said it best, it's all I can stands, I can't stands no more, you know, for those of you who would watch the cartoons or saw the Popeye movie. It's all I can stand, I can't stand anymore. Usually when it gets to that place, then we can do something about it. Then the possibility for change starts to become visible. Earlier in this chapter, Eckhart Tolle says that once we begin to do that, everything becomes clear. And I actually put up a little dispute to that, because it takes a while for clarity to occur. We'd like to think that, okay, well, I've stopped eating sugar, and now it's all clear now. Yes, I know exactly what to do. No, sometimes, you know, we still have to experiment with maybe other sweeteners or you know, the chemical sweeteners, whatever they call that stuff, I forget. You know, or maybe, or honey or something else. But we don't have instant answers just because we surrender. However, you know, the clarity does come. Things do clear up. Somebody who stops drinking obsessively doesn't clear up overnight. You know, it's going to take the body quite a while. As far as we are concerned, as human spiritual beings have a human experience, the human body operates on cycles, as does the planet, as does the galaxy, as does the solar system. You know, our concept of time, everything is in a cycle, and women, I always say, know that more than men. because they have a, you know, much more intimate relationship with their body than most men do. And so we recognize there are 30-day cycles of change, 30, 60, 90. And so for real change to occur, we have to give time time, which is another slogan from recovery, 12 steps. Give time time in our surrender, which means we have to stay surrendered. Doesn't mean surrender once and then the next day, okay, I'm not going to surrender tomorrow. Or, you know, surrender, and here's that wonderful slogan of one day at a time. Just for today, I surrender. And when we do that, we can kind of anchor ourselves in the surrender. So he says further down on page 178, was there anything you wanted to contribute to that, Ellen?
No.
Okay. Thank you. And we have another listener on the call. We want to say hello to Brenda. And, Brenda's on the line listening. And I think we had somebody online, but I think they have logged out. But maybe they'll log back in. So, the next question is non-resistance always to be practiced in the external conduct of our lives, such as non-resistance to violence, or is it something that just concerns our inner life? Eckhart Tolle responds by saying, you only need to be concerned with the inner aspect. That is primary. Of course, that will also transform the conduct of your outer life, your relationships, and so on. He says your relationships will be changed profoundly by surrender. If you cannot accept what is, by implication, you will not be able to accept anybody the way they are. You will judge, criticize, label, reject, or attempt to change people. Furthermore, if you continuously make the now into a means to an end in the future, you will also make every person you encounter or relate with into a means to an end. The relationship, the human being, is then of secondary importance to you, or of no importance at all. What you can get out of the relationship is primary, be it material gain, a sense of power, physical pleasure, or some form of ego gratification. So in other words, if we're not concerned with the inner aspect, we're going to try to control the outer. We're going to control the appearance. Like I said, the ego, you know, wants to look good at any and all costs if we let it run the show. He goes on to say at the bottom of 178 in the hardcover, let me illustrate how surrender can work in relationships. When you become involved in an argument or some conflict situation, perhaps with a partner or someone close to you, start by observing how defensive you become as your own position is attacked, or feel the force of your own aggression as you attack the other person's position. Observe the attachment to your views and opinions. Feel the mental emotional energy behind your need to be right and make the other person wrong. That's the energy of the egoic mind. You make it conscious by acknowledging it, by feeling it as fully as possible. Then, one day, in the middle of an argument, you will suddenly realize that you have a choice, and you may decide to drop your own reaction just to see what happens. You surrender. Now, that's a lot to say. Basically, stop arguing. You know? Reverend Mwata said it wonderfully last week, where he said he realized that if he had to say something three times, that he was to be quiet. He was to shut himself up. Because he realized he was trying to assert his own position, to have his way be understood. Now, there's a saying, again, that's very popular in the rooms of recovery in the 12 steps, and it goes, and it's not original to AA or NA or any other A, But it says it's better to understand than to be understood. And usually that takes surrender, because most of us want to be understood. That was a big thing for me growing up as a child. Nobody seemed to understand me. Nobody wanted to seem to understand me. But they don't understand, you know. It was like, it was very torturous. I was very quiet for many, many years. I just stayed to myself. I didn't feel like I needed to have an opinion, because if I did, it would get smacked down anyway. So why bother? Little did I know that that was surrender, that I probably did have peace of mind anyway in the long run. You know, I mean, instead of feeling like, well, if what I say is going to be wrong anyway, then don't say anything. Well, yeah. I wasn't able to convince them of what I saw or thought or my perception from my point of view. So, hey, just be quiet anyway. And who knows, I probably saved myself a lot of headaches. And so what he's saying is, in the middle of an argument, one day, you will suddenly realize that you have a choice. And you may decide to drop your own reaction just to see what happens. And I think that's very powerful, too. Because what would the world be like? I mean, what would the UN, the United Nations, be like? You know, they'd just be sitting in a room of silence if they're not arguing with each other, trying to see it my way. This is why I'm attacking that country, and this is why we shouldn't support these people. And, well, wait a minute. You know, maybe there is a way of peace, of inner peace. You know, and when that happens, and this is what I say, the inner peace will show up in the outer. All right? If things don't look peaceful on the outside, then we definitely have to do our work on the inside so that we can begin to see an out-picturing of what we're experiencing on the inside. There's a story about from the Bible. Jesus on the boat with his disciples, and they're going for a very big affair. Well, actually, they're going to what would eventually be Jesus's crucifixion. But they're on the boat, and the disciples are all worried about how they're going to be received when they get to the shore. And it's just a tempest, it's a storm, and you know, and I always look at it as like, well, Jesus is just chilling, he's trying to sleep, you know, and they're like, Jesus, hey, master, what's going on? How can you relax at a time like this? Look, there's a storm brewing, and Jesus is like, peace, be still, you know, everything's okay, you know, and everything was okay within himself, and he got them to see that. And guess what? The storm went away, and the waters were calm. He said, peace, be still. I think he was like, look, I want to go to sleep. You know, would you just be still? You're rocking the boat here. You know? That's how I look at it. And we do that with each other. It's like, what are you getting upset about? Relax. It's okay. I got this. You know? That kind of aspect. And a lot of times, when people do not feel in control of their own lives, they wonder how you can be in control. How can you be so calm? How can you be, you know, don't you see what's happening? And nothing's happening. It's all in the mind. It's all in the brain. It's an ego operating out of fear. But if you're, and as Eckhart Tolle says, if you're unconscious, then you can't, you're not going to be able to see past that limited fear. You can't see past it. You can't see through it. You're stuck in it. So somehow we've got to get back into, that's all I can stand. I can't stand no more. So things start to clear up a little. I think in a cartoon, Popeye was always fighting Brutus over olive oil. He always wanted olive oil to be his girlfriend, and Brutus was always trying to take olive oil, and she could go with whoever won. Didn't seem to matter. You know? There must be a spiritual truth in there somewhere. But Popeye would always get to a point where he'd have to go with his strength. Well, it was a spinach. But he would always have to get to a point where he had to go beyond his limited thinking. And the disciples in the boat, their thinking had them you know, worried and fearful. And they had to go with the real strength. They go with the inner strength of Jesus. They say, hey, peace be still. You know, we have peace on the inside. It's going to show up on the outside. So Eckhart Tolle says, only be concerned with the inner aspect. Let's pick up where we left off. He says, one day in the middle of an argument, you suddenly realize you have a choice. You drop your own reaction just to see what happens. He says, you surrender. I don't mean dropping the reaction just verbally by saying, okay, you are right, with a look on your face that says, I am above all this childish unconsciousness. That's just displacing the resistance to another level with the egoic mind still in charge, claiming superiority. He says, I am speaking of letting go of the entire mental, emotional energy field inside you that was fighting for power. He says, you have to let the ego thinking go. And a lot of times we do that. It's called passive-aggressive, when we just like, okay, you're right. Okay. Yeah, I'm better than that. And we let the other person think that they won. Eckhart Tolle says that's displacing resistance. He goes on to say in the middle of the page 179, the ego is coming. So you have to be very alert, very present, and totally honest with yourself to see whether you have truly relinquished your identification with a mental position and so freed yourself from your mind. Now, he says the ego is cunning. And that's very interesting because throughout the book, a lot of times it seems as though there is separation, that there is a duality going on. And in a sense, that could be correct, in the sense that it only seems that way. We are spiritual beings, and we are operating the vehicle of the body that has a brain and that has an ego. And so it's all one. It's all part of the one. It's just that when we forget who we are, in that moment of forgetfulness, there becomes duality. There comes the separateness. There comes a separation where there's me and then there's ego. And ego is running the show so much so that me and ego seem the same. He says the ego is so cunning. You have to be totally honest with yourself. See, and you're bringing your awareness to your spiritual true nature and realize that ego is only an aspect of the human self, not the whole spiritual composite self. No. It's an aspect. It's a tool that the big S self uses. Ego's not in control unless you let it be in control. It says, if you suddenly feel very light, clear, and deeply at peace, that is an unmistakable sign that you have truly surrendered. It's when your shoulders drop, you know, you feel the tenseness lift. You're not chewing and your jaw doesn't feel tight. You take a sigh of relief. And everything's okay. You can smile. And then that usually pisses people off anyway. I'm going to invite our other caller on the line, who is our co-host. So let's say hello, Hondra.
Hello, everyone. How are you tonight? I apologize for being late, unavoidable circumstances.
Hi, Miss Hondra. Hi, Mom.
How are you?
Wonderful. You're right where you're supposed to be. And say hello to our online guests, Ellen and Brenda.
Fantastic. How are you? Both of you. Wonderful. I'm glad
good,
you were
good.
Able to join us.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So we are in the personal relationships section. And the section that I was just reading about the ego being so cunning, it says, then observe what happens to the other person's mental position as you no longer energize it through resistance. When identification with mental positions is out of the way, true communication begins. Now, you still need two people. That's what I say. You know, it's like I can identify, you know, with the spiritual essence and person, you know, of the person, but is it going to go both ways if the other person isn't surrendered? And so this is on page 179.
Okay.
Yeah. And so basically he's saying, you know, you have to check the ego. It's like check the ego at the door. Let the ego, you know, not be the base of power. Because it never will be. It never will be. And most arguments, of course, are going to be fueled by the ego anyway. And there usually won't be a winner, not a real winner. It'll just be a temporary winner. Because has the truth actually been revealed? Or yeah, one person just gets tired. Like, okay.
I give.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
I see that as two bulls fighting in the ring, you know?
Uh-huh.
Constantly
yeah.
Butting heads. And until, you know, one decides, or both really has to decide, to just look at it from a higher perspective and try to see it from another person's point of view, then you can start making some progress. But then if you take a step higher and you start seeing it from the spiritual point of view, you can even make more progress.
Mm-hmm. Well, two bulls are going to pretty much fight to the death.
Yeah.
You know,
that happens. That happens.
Until one just gets dizzy and, you know, can't get up. Other than that, you know, they're just going to keep going. You know,
yeah.
And there are many human bulls that do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, they'll keep yelling until one gets hoarse and can't out-yell the other, and then, you know, that's it. That's funny, right? Turn a bull into a horse, you know.
And I have seen that happen. And
sure.
I know we've all seen it happen in different, you know, with different relationships that we have witnessed, that it does take that turn when somebody's not willing to give a position, or to engage it from the other person's point of view, or to even admit that they could possibly be wrong for whatever reason. You know, situation, circumstances may not always be as they appear to be, but when somebody has their mind set on this is how it is, then it can make it difficult to reframe it for them.
Very interesting. I'm looking at something from A Course in Miracles, and it talks about, of course, not in the same languaging, but it says, do not remain in conflict. This is about the war against yourself. Do not remain in conflict, for there is no war without attack. The fear of God is fear of life and not of death. He goes on to say, I want to read this part here. It says, a part that's easily understandable. Be lifted up and from a higher place look down upon it. From there will your perspective be quite different.
Right.
Here in the midst of it all, It does seem real. And he says, yet from above, the choice is miracles instead of murder. And a perspective coming from the choice shows you the battle is not real and easily escaped. How can a battle be perceived as nothingness when you engage in it? How can the truth of miracles be recognized if murder is your choice? And so even here, it's talking about surrender. You know, see things differently, but you can't see it differently unless you step back and look at it from above.
Right.
And that's the same thing Eckhart Tolle is saying. He's like, you know, remove yourself. Or like Reverend Mwatha said last week, stop arguing. You know, you have to take a step back. And that's one of the most important things that we can do. Eckhart Tolle calls it positive action.
Uh-huh.
So he goes on to say, what about resistance in the face of violence, aggression, and the like? He says, non-resistance doesn't necessarily mean doing nothing. All it means is that any doing becomes non-reactive. Remember the deep wisdom underlying the practice of Eastern martial arts. Don't resist the opponent's force. Yield to overcome. Having said that, doing nothing when you are in a state of intense presence is a very powerful transformer and healer of situations and people. In Taoism, there is a term called Wu Wei, which is usually translated as actionless activity, or sitting quietly doing nothing. In ancient China, this was regarded as one of the highest achievements or virtues. It is radically different from inactivity in the ordinary state of consciousness, or rather unconsciousness, which stems from fear, inertia, or indecision. The real doing nothing implies inner non-resistance and inner intense alertness. On the other hand, if action is required, you will no longer react from your conditioned mind, but you will respond to the situation out of your conscious presence. In that state, your mind is free of concepts, including the concept of nonviolence. So, who can predict what you will do? That's what he says. So, even being free of the concept of nonviolence, and I think that's because the concept of nonviolence is based on violence. You know, so if we are responding with a conscious presence of just allowing things to be as they are without offering resistance, it's like being against nothing. You know, or, you know, for everything and against nothing. If we're against things, that's resistance. You know, if we're for, and I mean for life-affirming things, you know, that's more of a response. And so as he goes on to say, the ego believes that in your resistance lies your strength, whereas in truth, resistance cuts you off from being the only place of true power. Resistance is weakness and fear masquerading as strength. So doing nothing, or actionless activity, or sitting quietly doing nothing, is the way to be.
I was just reading, and I can't find it in a book by Ernest Holmes, but he says, when you are in confusion, and when you're in an argument, there is confusion, otherwise there'll be peace, to go into a meditative state and connect with the one for the guidance in that situation. That's what I was talking about, trying to go to a higher place, going to that spiritual place. So we enter this argument and we're debating, you know, back and forth our points of view and trying to prove I'm right and you're wrong. So he says, go get still. Go into that meditative state, connect with that being, and then you can see it from a greater perspective. So that's another tool when Eckhart Tolle talks about, you know, non-resistance. and being quiet is the same thing in a different way, that you surrender the ego to that higher level of consciousness so that you can then see what actually needs to be done. If it's nothing, or if you need to do something, but you be guided in it rather than forcing your way on the other person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I love it. That's right. And that's what it is. You know, so many times we think we need to, you know, that, I mean, you talked earlier about saying no, you know, how
uh-huh.
powerful it can be just to say no. The same thing is sometimes we feel that we need to control situations, like I said before, by any means necessary.
Right.
And actually that is more resistance, you know, because we can't really truly control anybody.
Yeah, but some people don't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't really, it's a willingness on the other person to go along with whatever it's up for them, because we always had a choice to say yay or nay.
And it takes two, you know.
It takes two. My mom used to always say, it takes two to argue, and only a fool argues with himself. So you need to stop arguing.
And
that's
even worse
if
you lose an argument with yourself. Oh, you're really in trouble.
And so I noticed when she and my father would get into it, you know, she would just sit there and she'd just say, yes, dear Roy, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I would get so upset with her because I'm like, why don't you defend yourself? And she said, it takes two to argue, and only a fool would argue with himself. So she would just get quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, wow. Now I see a lot of the wisdom in what she did, but now then I just was just pissed, you know. I was upset with her because
mm-hmm.
I didn't feel that she was standing up for herself, but it's true.
Right.
She was, you know, letting, being in the present and not being in resistance, and letting him vent, and became more powerful.
And so in truth, she was standing up for herself, capital
mm-hmm.
S, so.
Capital S,
you know,
yeah.
by not going to that lower ground.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Or that lower consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used earlier the example of Jesus in the boat with his disciples,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, where there's a storm and the disciples are, like you said, confused and worried and scared and fearful.
Right.
And Jesus is sleeping in the boat, you know, like, hey, yeah, wake up. You know, how come you're not scared like us? You know, what's going
uh-huh.
on? You know, and he's like, peace, be still, you know, and I think most people think that he's talking to the water. He's talking to nature. He's controlling
mm-hmm.
the waves. And actually,
uh-huh.
he's teaching his disciples, you know, be peace, show inner peace. Yeah,
uh-huh.
inner peace will show up as an outer experience of peace.
Uh-huh.
Be still. He wasn't talking to the water, really. You know, he was talking to the waves of consciousness within the disciples and
uh-huh.
himself, of course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, because like, look, I'm not going to get upset that you woke me up. You know,
mm-hmm.
peace, be still. You know, going back to sleep. You know, wake me up when we get there. You know, I'm all right. You know, come on, guys. Haven't I taught you anything by now? You know. But that,
well, it's
that's
been over 2,000 years and people are still trying to get it.
Yeah.
We're still
and
trying to get it 2,000 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So we take a look at, again, in the Power of Now, as we continue to move through Chapter 10. And he says, until there is surrender, well, actually, I want to move up a little further. It says, when the ego sees, what the ego sees as weakness is your being in its purity, innocence, and power. What it sees as strength is weakness. So the ego exists in a continuous resistance mode and plays counterfeit roles to cover up your weakness, which is in truth your power.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we empower the ego, it's going to keep doing that.
Right.
As long as we empower the ego with a belief you know, what the ego believes in, you know, that upside down thinking that says, oh, your strength is really a weakness, you know, because people would have looked at Jesus like, what do you mean, peace be still? What are you talking about? Row the boat, you know, change the direction, put up the sail, put down the sail, do something, you know. Let's swim for it, you know. Well, how does that saying go? Out of the frying pan, into the fire. You know, that's fear. That's what
right.
fear will do.
Uh-huh.
You know? It's because doing nothingness, it drives the ego crazy. No, we got to do something. You know? You're just going to sit there? You know? Ego is a doer. It wants to get things done, even if it's not the right thing. As long as we're doing something, you know, that's the important thing. That's the ego, you know, and that's what it gets paid to do. That's what it's there for. Get stuff done. And what I like to say in classes is, like, give the ego something to do, even if it's meditate.
Uh-huh.
You know, tell the ego, hey, listen, I bet you can't meditate. Well, you know, ego's like, oh, yeah, I can. I'm a great meditator. Well, let's see. You know, give the ego something to do. You know, don't just cast it off in a room by itself like a little spoiled child, which, you know, it is anyway. But, you know, give it something to do. You know, so, you know, a lot of times when we act in this way of separation and separate the ego, it's going to keep doing what it does. Like he says here, it's a continuous role, continuous resistance mode. And plays counterfeit roles to cover up your, in quotes, weakness, which in truth is your power. So I think the more we keep setting ego aside, going to room, you're a bad boy, you know, it's going to keep being that. You know, until we give it something constructive to do, you know, it's going to keep acting that way.
Well, you know,
that's my belief.
Well, you know, that's a really good child raising strategy. When the kids are doing stuff that you don't want them to do, you
mm-hmm.
have to think of, what is it? What can I give them to do that's a positive thing? So you give them a job, or you give them a chore, or you give them something that they would do to keep them from doing stuff that you don't want them to do. In fact, the other one is talking about the verb, what you want them to do, not do. So you tell them to walk. Not don't run, you know, they understand
right.
walk, they don't
oh, right.
they don't understand don't run, you know,
yeah.
and stuff like that. So just the changing of the language, if we look at, I love the analogy you're making of the ego being like a little spoiled child, you know, because it wants to have its way regardless of what's going on. The ego wants to have its way, and it will have a fit when it doesn't have its way. So then what would you do with a spoiled child when that spoiled child was having a fit, you know? You redirect. You redirect
That's
them
right.
into something more constructive, is what you're talking about. So we redirect the ego so that it can have something constructive to do. So then, it, to me, that means that comes to a bit of pre-planning. So if you
have
a child that is kind of like, you know, want to have it fit and do what he wants to do anyway, you have to think ahead of time. Now, what am I going to do with this child when they start to have this fit? You know, what am I going to do with them? How can I redirect that energy into something more constructive, you know? And so do the same thing with ourselves. So we get into a situation where, you know, there's an argument or potential argument. You know, how do I handle myself in this situation so as to not escalate it? Because the way we react a lot of times escalate rather than de-escalate a situation. I know when I was doing my principalship, I had a teacher who consistently escalated conflict between students. And so I talked to him about, you know, de-escalating the situation. In fact, I had to have him go to a workshop on behavior management and how to de-escalate rather than escalate a situation in the classroom, you know. And he wound up having to put on a performance improvement plan on that very issue because he was escalating, not de-escalating, situation in the classroom. And a lot of that stuff is so totally unnecessary. But we have to plan ahead so we'll know how we're going to react in certain situations so that we can de-escalate rather than escalate the argument or the conflict or whatever that is going on.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Reverend Walter last week also mentioned how important it is to recognize that when we are in the presence of the conflict or potential conflict, that it's also an opportunity for a number of things to happen. One, for us to go within, you know, and recognize that place of peace within, but that those people are also angels for us in a way, you know, that guide us to that place within us where the truth does reside. You know, so not only is it, you know, trying to control the external part of it, but we have to first find that within ourselves, and usually it's going to take some situation to get us to look within. Because
right.
We can't, how does that go? You can't change the effect from the outside, or, gee, I just totally badly paraphrased that.
You can't change the problem from the level of the problem.
Thank you.
It says you can't. Yeah, you can't change the problem from the level of the problem. You have to go higher. You have to see it from a different perspective. And basically, you know, that's what happens. I mean, just in life in general, something happens, and then we have to figure out another way of doing it or a different way of looking at it, or, you know, what we were doing or have been doing hasn't been working. So then we have to try a different approach.
Yeah.
And
well,
if we're looking at, okay, so that didn't work, you know, it's like Edison says he learned, what, 99,000 ways not to make a light bulb. Yeah.
Right. That's right.
And
well,
so we learn what not to do, and then we learn through that, as like the trial and error, a lot of times what to do. But fortunately, we have had a lot of people document what not to do and show us the path of what to do that works better. We can try some of that and learn from the people who have gone before us.
So true. So true. So one of the things we're going to do is as we wrap up this chapter, this section, because we're going to move into transforming illness into enlightenment. Well, let's just finish the end of this because our time is running out. He says, until there is surrender, unconscious role-playing constitutes a larger part of human interaction. In surrender, you no longer need ego defenses and false masks. You become very simple, very real. That's dangerous, says the ego. You'll get hurt. You'll become vulnerable. What the ego doesn't know, of course, is that it is only through letting go of resistance, through becoming vulnerable, can you discover your true and essential invulnerability. That means once you let your guard down, you get to see how strong you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, wow, wait a minute. You know, it's like Superman wearing an iron suit. You know, it's like not knowing that he's already invulnerable. You know, if he doesn't know that anything can't hurt him, he's going to wear something that's going to protect him. You know,
right.
And many of us do that. We put up the wall and the barriers and the fences and the masks and everything, not knowing the very true nature of who we are cannot be hurt, cannot be harmed. And that's because we are spirit. And when we get confused thinking that we are our body and that the body can bleed and the body can get bruised and can get hurt and broken and all of that, we want to defend it at all costs because this is where the ego lives. The ego lives in the body. You know, and it's like, oh, that's my house. You know, don't mess with my house. You know, but when we know the true nature of who we are, our real strength is knowing that I am spirit. I am whole, perfect, and complete now and forevermore, no matter what body I'm wearing, no matter what car I'm driving, you know, no matter what vehicle I'm visiting, you know, it doesn't matter. I am an eternal being. Who knows how many bodies I've had or will have. And if this is the only one, then so be it. I'm off to some other adventure.
Yeah. And one other thing I like to share was, I think I said once before, one year I told the staff that I was working on patients, and they said, oh, God, you know, you're just asking for it, right? And I was reading an article on patience, and it was saying patience and silence show inner strength. Because you have to be patient. You have to have an inner strength going on there to not react immediately to a situation, to sit back and watch it to see what is it that's going on here without jumping to some conclusions or without forming your opinions and chopping somebody off at the pass, so to speak. So with impatience and in silence, you do find an inner strength. That's when you rise higher to say, what's really going on here? And you pay attention, you listen, and you see what is that person's point of view? What are they trying to say? What are the feelings underneath that they're trying to express? And it's in that silence and in that patience that you can allow them to say what they need to say and then find the question, because the question will just come to you. To ask them, well, what are you thinking or what are you feeling about that gets you so upset? What is it? You know, and see if that works. But I know I've used it, and it definitely works for me to ask the question, just why?
Yes, indeed. Any comments from anybody else in the time that we have remaining? Okay. Well, as we wrap up today's show, I want to thank everybody for being on the call. And we're going to end with a few different things. We're going to end with a little music. We're going to end with some prayer, some knowing of the truth. But before we do, I just want to remind each and everyone that you're listening to One Love Center Presents, The Power of Now. My name is Rodney Gittins, a religious science practitioner, and on the call we have Reverend Hajra Rahim, as well as Ellen Suazo. And we want to thank Ellen for showing up and participating in the way that she does. And also, I don't mean just here on the call, but I mean in life, because she's just a wonderful, wonderful, bright light spirit. And we fully support her on her path of enlightenment, as well as the way that she brings others along in that as well. So thank you all for being here. And One Love Center does meet the first and third Sunday of every month. We'll be meeting three times in December. And the third time, the December 28th, is the Burning Bowl Ceremony. All are welcome. And if you haven't experienced it, please come and assist yourself in having a wonderful end of the old year and wonderful entrance into the new. So One Love Center, again, meets first and third Sunday at 886 Pacific Street at the Village of Gorreje, Renate Albertson Martin Gallery, which is available for use for people in the community. And but come visit us. Our next session is not this Sunday, but the Sunday after, which would be November 16th. All are welcome, 11:30 a.m. And I'm just really loving the opportunity to present what we do here through this medium, and also live and in person at 886 Pacific Street, 11:30 a.m. on Sundays. So, Hajra, would you like to say any closing words?
Well, I am just so grateful just for life and for being in the presence of such wonderful people, and to know that God is all there is and that we all live this one life. And as we enter this holiday season with Thanksgiving and celebration, that we truly have much to be thankful for. And also want to encourage people to go to the One Love Center blog and log into that and talk about gratitude.
Absolutely. And you can reach us at onelove@onelovecenter.org by email, onelove, that's O-N-E-L-O-V-E, at onelovecenter.org. You can call us at 917-755-1418. And you can look us up on our website at onelovecenter.org. And we certainly love having you. Ellen, would you like to say anything in closing?
I want to say that it has been a pleasure to be part of the call. And thank you for all the wonderful insights.
Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. And please feel free to join us again and tell a friend.
Take care.
All right. We are going to end with a wonderful song called How Do You View You by George Clinton. Peace and blessings, everyone. Knowing that right where you are, the very presence of God is. Thank you. Thank you for being on the planet. Love grows. How do you view you? George Clinton. How do you view yourself? See yourself as peace, of love, of joy, as all the good. All the good that you can imagine. And see yourself as inner peace and see it show up in your world. Peace and blessings. That's it. Okay, we're done. Oh, that's you. You're on, Brenda. Okay. right. No, I mean, it's, you can hear me, I can hear you. The show's over. It's not recording. Because the line is open, but it's not recording.
Mine didn't say end of Block Talk Radio, though.
It says that? No, it's normally. Don't say it now.